Today's episode of Puck Soup is sponsored by Kidnap. Halle Berry stars in the heart-stopping action thriller as a mother who will stop at nothing to rescue her kidnapped son. Kidnap, available now on digital HD and on Blu-ray and DVD on October 31st.
Sticks and hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to what if you commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hoggy and nonsense. Puck Soup.
I'm Dave Lozo of Vice Sports and many other publications where I freelance for money.
And I'm Greg Wyszynski of ESPN, and you're in Puck Soup.
God, I hate that you get to do that every week now.
I like the fact that you have to start because you're so such an unconfident. I'm a wordsmith.
Incontinent?
You lack confidence as a broadcaster, so I feel like every time you open the show, I feel like it's like the people listening believe it's at gunpoint.
What do you mean I lack confidence?
I'm saying like when I start the show, it's like I'm Greg Wish. It's like I'm an announcer, man. I'm inviting you to the announcing show.
You're confusing a lack of confidence with a lack of genuineness where you're, hey, Greg Wyszynski, the radio man, live here on Sully and the Beans on K-Boston, number one Boston sports talk show in the world.
But a lack of authenticity is inherent in the job of being a broadcaster.
No, bullshit.
Do you remember listening to Vince McMahon when he used to do play-by-play on WWF back in the day?
No,
and like Coco Beware would bring his bird into the ring and the bird would like shit all over Nikolai Volkoff and then Vince would have to go, ha, 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 oh, Coco Beware, ha, 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 ha.
All right, no. First of all,
actually believe it's fun.
First of all, a bird shitting on someone's hilarious every time. There's no need to be fake for that.
Somebody.
Like here when it's like, hey, I'm Dave Lozo of Vice Sports. Nice. Welcome to the show, everybody. How you doing? Hi, I'm Dave.
Somebody's just revealed himself as owning a Damn Siegel shirt he got at Highlands 1 year.
What's that?
You.
What's a Damn Siegel
You never
Siegel
saw
shirt?
A Damn Siegel shirt when you're at the boardwalk and they sell those shirts that are like, they've got like paint on
like
them and it
poop.
Says damn right. Seagulls or darn seagulls if you're a kid like I was when I got that shirt.
Fucking seagulls.
Yeah, that's right. The coarsening of our society can be traced through the progression of damn seagulls shirts. Like
motherfucking seagulls.
Darn seagulls. Damn seagulls. Fucking seagulls.
Shit fucking ball ass fuck balls seagulls.
Yeah, and finally make seagulls great again.
By the way, sorry if you put this on in front of your kids.
Yeah.
In the car.
Yeah, but they should know seagulls suck.
That's on me, man.
And we mean the birds, not like Peter Siegel or any of, you know,
George Siegel.
Katie Seagal.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, speaking of wrestling, I don't like the fact that you wrestling people are claiming Roman Reigns for the motivation for Kevin BX's punch and not Brad Pitt in the movie where he's in like Greece or whatever.
Oh, you mean Troy.
Troy.
Greece or whatever.
Or whatever that movie was about. I don't know. It was just basically like Brad Pitt eroticism for 2 hours where he walks around with no shirt on and he stabs it. He does the running jump with the sword thing.
You mean Babel? Oh, wait. No, you mean Troy when he was fighting people, not in the movie in which it was an emotional journey.
What the hell's Babel?
Forget it. Point being is that you want to believe that Brad Pitt, a.k.a. Achilles, invented the Superman punch.
Well, doesn't the name of the punch indicate that Superman invented it?
Yes. One would, you know, much like Lou Gehrig invented Lou Gehrig's disease. Now, here's the thing.
Yes, tell
me. When Kevin BX landed the Superman punch on Radko Gudas, which is, by the way, the second time he's employed this tactic, people were sending me YouTube of Kevin BX landing a Superman punch on Mike Richards.
By the way, when I first saw that, I was like, what a dirty play. What a cheesy, shitty way to fight somebody. And then I saw it was Radko Gudas, and I was like, oh, it's fine.
Yeah, it's fine. He had it coming.
It's okay.
Yeah, so for the Superman punch is basically like you lunge with your fist while lifting up your back leg. And much like Superman would punch Darkseid, for example.
Just going to say that.
This is the sort of punches. Now, what I've come to learn about the Superman punch is that...
In your research today.
I, again, one would assume it originated with the titular Superman.
The what?
But also, you know, it was popularized by Roman Reigns as being one of his finishing moves.
That's a finishing move in wrestling, punching a guy in the face? Like, back when I was a kid, it was like the pile driver or the leg drop. Now it's just punching a guy in the
Roman
face.
Roman Reigns, much... Remember how The Rock originated this thing?
No, where,
let me rephrase that. Shawn Michaels originated the thing where you have to do something to indicate that you're then going to do something else. So before Sweet Chin Music, his super kick, he would stamp his foot on the ground. I am preparing to do the super kick. I'm loading up my leg. Here comes the power. Like if there's a fucking a bar of like a power bar like you'd have in Mortal Kombat or some shit where he's like stamping his leg and
you're like holding down the B button.
Yeah, you're holding down the B button to make sure the super kick is ready to be unleashed. And then The Rock, of course, would have to do his whole jibbly jew wriggly roll, thing before he dropped the people's elbow where he's running back and forth and doing the whole thing. And now Roman Reigns, before he administers the Superman punch, he cocks and loads his hand like he's got a pump shotgun hand.
Oh, like in 22 Jump Street when they're doing like the breaking through to the ceiling
yeah,
with their fist?
Like
that's
that.
That's what he does?
And then he actually punches the ground like Superman would, where if Superman punched the ground would get all cracked.
Right, it would like,
you know,
like flow out
like
from the center.
Like a spider web when like a rock hits your windshield.
Mm-hmm.
Not the rock, but like a gravel of
not
some
the
sort.
Rock, yeah.
And then he punches the ring and now he's like... He's like, and then he roars or something, and he's powering up his fist with power.
This is so embarrassing.
To then punch his opponent with the Superman punch.
But like, while he's doing all that, can't the guy he's about to punch like put up his defenses?
An excellent question, but completely revealing your ignorance of the sequence of events.
Uh-huh.
This is usually after he spears somebody, so the guy he's going to Superman punch has already
with
been
a hockey
felled.
Stick
or? No, with his body. You know,
he puts his head into his stomach.
His shoulder, like a shoulder.
Well, that's not spearing. That's a clean tackle.
So he does that. He's felled his opponent. One would assume that this would be enough, but no, you then need to administer the Superman punch to finish the match. Unlike Kevin Bieksa, the Roman Reigns of hockey, as we all know, who, because no one likes him, who administered the Superman punch straight off the bat on that fight. Like, that's not the way it's supposed to work.
Well, no, that's when you have to do it.
In
real life, not in wrestling,
right,
where it's not real. Like, in real life, you have to get that first punch in against the bigger guy, so you do what you got to do. So that's
yeah,
fine. That's totally fine.
Right, but in wrestling, like, the match doesn't begin with the Stone Cold Stunner, because that would ruin the match. The match would just end there, because it's such a devastating maneuver.
Although, when Mike Tyson was at his peak, everyone thought it was awesome that he knocked out dudes in, like, 30 seconds. So,
right,
like, why can't wrestling adopt that? Like, the Superman punch. Oh, is he going to finish him in the first minute? Oh, my God, he got him!
I imagine if Roman Reigns was fighting Peter McNeely or Michael Spinks,
McNeely,
the chance was there that he would administer the Superman punch lickety-split, because he just doesn't want to waste time.
But you build it, though. You have him, like, you have Roman Reigns win, like, 20 matches in a row in 15 seconds, and then, like, Buster Douglas comes in, and out of nowhere, like, he just messes up Roman Reigns for 10 rounds and wins, and it's, like, the greatest event ever.
Well, it's like,
there was one
guy on Mike Tyson's Punch-Out, oh, by the way, spoiler, we're due a top 10 video games thing on the Patreon at some point, where, like, you had to hit him, like, really quick. I forget which character it was. You remember which character it was? Where, like, the whole point was that the minute he comes out, you have just to start hitting him and hitting him and hitting him and hitting him and then it would knock him down.
That's either,
might have been, like, Piston Honda.
I think it was Don Flamenco.
It might have been, it was Don
Flamenco.
You
had to, like, left, right, him, left, right, him, left, right.
So you're not wasting time there. You're waxing this guy. The last thing you want is for this guy to put a rose between his teeth and come and hit you with that uppercut. So you're putting him down and straight away.
I can't believe how much we've talked about wrestling so far.
But now we're on boxing. The sweet science.
The sweet science.
So yeah, Kevin Bieksa's Superman punch, it was great. By the way, kudos to Barry Pachesky from Deadspin, who once and future guest on this very podcast came to our live show in Brooklyn, who said what I think is the truth about hockey fans in 2017 when it comes to fighting, which is that he admitted, like, he's like, I rail against fighting. I think fighting's horrible. I'm super conservative on fighting. Don't want fighting in the game. However,
right. Like, once, I've always said this.
When someone lands a Superman punch in a fight, you have to kind of watch it and maybe even relish that moment.
Yeah, like my caveman brain, when I see a dude get punched in the face, I'm like, oh my God, that was bad. But oh, it was awesome. I hate hockey fights. Was it Tyler Seguin had a fight this year where him and some dude just like shook each other's shoulders for 15 seconds and everyone was like, oh yeah, I want to see you do that. Honestly, I could do that. I could just stand there with somebody bigger than me for 15 seconds and shake their shoulders and then get it broken up. Like, those fights are dumb.
Do you think that, though, do you think that part of the equation for people who don't like hockey fights as to whether or not a fight is acceptable is the origins of the fight? Like, I think we can all agree that a sideshow fight off a face-off that it just happens because it's supposed to, like a fucking John Tortorella special. Like, we can all agree that's dumb.
Yeah,
we can all agree that a fight in a tie game with 3 minutes left is dumb.
They're all dumb.
But
they're all dumb in their own way.
But no, but like this one was, these two guys had unsportsmanlike conduct penalties. They're in the penalty box. You know they're talking shit. You know BX is hitting them with some smart trolling. And Kudos is like, Reichel smash! and then they come out of the penalty box, and then they have a fight. Like, to me, the origins of that fight are somehow more noble than the sideshow of it.
Like, if you had to say, like, for me, the worst origin of a fight is always after a clean hit. I hate that.
Yeah,
that's
the worst
thing. I hate
when
a dude hits a guy and then someone's got to stick up for their teammate. Yeah. I hate that. Yeah. I hate that more than the sideshow fight. At least the sideshow fight is with two guys that, in theory, know how to fight.
And in theory, are there for the sideshow.
Yeah. Like, when star players, like, this wasn't even considered a fight, but it was that Penguins-Rangers game where Shattenkirk and Malkin, they both landed closed, barehanded fists to each other's face, and it was, like, 2 minutes for roughing. Like, it's like, even in, like, hockey, if you're, like, rich and famous, you still get lesser penalties for crimes. Yeah. It's amazing.
Well, what's amazing is that Bieksa also had a hand, literally, in the other, you know, story from earlier this week, which was the Andrew Shaw thing. We'll get to the other side of that equation in a second, but, like, Shaw was pissed off, and rightfully so, that, like, Bieksa just sucker punched him.
Right.
Just sucker punched him.
That was a sucker punch. The Gudas thing was just more.
But Shaw was livid and good for good reason because fucking BX, what do you have to get an instigator penalty in this league?
I know.
You know, I think he got a double minor for roughing.
But didn't it balance out? Didn't like nobody get a power play out of that?
It might have been that. But like the point being is that Shaw was clearly like goaded into doing what he had to do because he just got punched in the face by somebody in front of the net and everybody was like, well, hockey.
Yeah, like that happens a lot where like a guy, because like referees are cowards, we all know this, and there'll be like a scrum in front of the net and like one dude will just like crack a dude in the back of the head 6 times in a row, and then like on the 7th one, the guy kind of like just throws up his fist into the other guy's face and the referee points at both of them and it's like,
all right, show's over, nothing to say here, both of you to the hooscow.
And the guy's like, wait, it's 6-1, where's the justice here? And then the fucking guy in the booth every time, oh, the referees always get the guy who retaliates.
That's why I love that highlight from the Vancouver-Boston Stanley Cup final where Marchand is literally just rabbit punching Sedin in the face, and there's a look on Marchand's face, it's just like, can I just keep doing this?
I mean, like, he just hits me once and it's 2-2, right?
Like,
so
I mean, I'm not that, like, can they not see this? Am I behind Chara? Is that why no one can see?
I know, right?
Because I'm behind Chara?
It's like, it's like is it Indiana Jones and that happens where like he's being a tough guy and he doesn't realize like the entire
thing behind
army's
him.
Behind them? No, that's like the opposite, actually.
Well, he's also running away. Like it's also the Han Solo thing where he runs down the hallway with Chewie, and then the stormtroopers rock him back the other way.
Yeah.
The Shaw thing, we should probably address that. Like, Andrew Shaw said, that's not fucking fair in the penalty box. It gets shown on the air and then gets clipped by somebody who does the just asking the question.
Yeah.
Did he drop the homophobic slur that got him suspended and had him on the apology tour? And
I'm
now
not saying Aaron Judge is on steroids.
And
I'm
now he's
asking.
In LGBT. So that happened. I give the NHL credit for looking into it because I feel like there was a time in the recent history of this league where they would just not give a shit.
Like the last playoffs when Ryan Getzlaff called someone a sea sucker. Yeah.
That well, that's a different thing. That's where like – Instead of identifying it as what it is, which is a homophobic slur or a comment in which you're using, you know, homophobia as a weapon against a referee that you didn't like his call, you have old school guys in the NHL, Colin Campbell, who probably like, but I use that word all the time, you know, and just like
I call my butler that every day. What's wrong with Jeeves? Doesn't seem to find it to be offensive.
So they see it. They see a point of demarcation between a slur and what Getzlaff said. But again, they were wrong, and he should have been suspended. But because they've established that
it was
as the norm.
And it was the
playoffs, I give them credit for looking into the Shaw thing, and they interviewed all the on ice officials. They interviewed the penalty box guy. They interviewed Shaw, and I think they got it right. I don't think he used it. I think I'm kind of erring on the side of this guy having figured out a thing or two about what he said and why it was wrong and actually trying to not do it anymore. Like I'm kind of going with that. It would be not the first time when I've assumed rehabilitation for a player and then they'd go and do something fucking stupid. But in Shaw's case, like benefit of the doubt now. And I feel really bad that like I think it's a contingent on hockey fans to press the NHL on these issues and let them know that shit has to change, that it's not right, and that, yeah, we should fucking throw the book at guys that are using these words in these situations, especially because cameras are everywhere now.
Which book specifically?
The book of rules in theory.
Oh, there's a rule book for the NHL?
Yeah, well, I mean, War and Peace for sheer tonnage, I guess.
I'd go phone book because it doesn't leave any bruises or evidence.
But the rub is there are no more phone books.
Just take my go to Yelp.com on my computer and just throw it at him.
I would strap him to a payphone. What? But I think in this case, like, I think we need to be kind of like there's a way to approach the Shaw thing, and I think the way to approach it was. I don't know. Did he say this thing? But instead it was people being like, Andrew Shaw, once again.
It looked like he said it, though.
But
I can see.
But it's raw. We're not lip readers.
I know, but
we're people that have preconceptions of what this guy maybe said. But, like, it's totally fucking unfair to the guy to do that.
It's not totally unfair. He kind of lost that idea of the benefit of the doubt once he did it the first time. Like, for sure, doesn't mean he necessarily has to be convicted every time you see him moving his mouth.
But isn't that the whole point of rehabilitation? Like, isn't that the whole point of this is to change behavior?
That was, what, a year ago?
Yeah, it was a year ago. And in that time, he went through an entire summer where he's, like, apologizing to people, working with You Can Play, became an ambassador for You Can Play. Like I think the guy deserves some modicum of benefit of the doubt that he's learned something.
But even, like, let's say you go to prison and you get released. You still got to go visit your PO every couple months to make sure you're still on the up and up. You don't just automatically.
And that's why I think we can be the PO. But the PO's job is not to be like.
That's parole officer, by the way, for those of you that don't
watch.
The
PO's job is not to be like, hey, were you in a casino? Yeah. Oh, obviously you tried to rob it. Like, that's what we basically did to Shaw.
No, Danny Ocean was not allowed to go to the casinos. That was part of his release from prison.
Okay, were you in the parking lot of a casino? Yeah. I got lost and I was texting and I needed to pull over while I was texting because it's against the law to text in the car.
Yeah.
Well, were you trying to rob the casino? Well, no.
Maybe he was casing the casino for
the
parking lot.
Well, even though it was a fight night, and on a fight night, there's $150 million in the vault between the Mirage, the Bellagio, and the MGM Grand.
Why did you go see Rusty? Isn't Rusty one of your known associates? But, like, no, he didn't say it, but I can understand why people in that situation would think he did because, yeah, we're all amateur lip readers. We don't know for sure. But, like, when he said it the first time, I remember watching that from, like, 50 feet away in a bar, and I was like, ooh, I think he just said the magic word. But Outsports, you see the Outsports thing?
No, I didn't see what they wrote.
They brought in, like, a lip reader, and she was like, same thing. Like, yeah, you didn't say it. Yeah. The word he said ended in an R. So whatever he said, he didn't say that word.
Yeah,
so.
but he's also kind of dumb, so it's possible he thought that other word ended in an R, too.
That fucking fucker. I mean, I think we should just ban all banned language on the ice. Let's just be peaceful and be nice and kind to each other.
Those are the people that I can't. I can't even. People are like, "What? You can't even say that word anymore?" Like, no, you can't.
What, fuck?
No, the other one.
Oh, yeah.
But like when the Getzlaf thing went down. Oh, well, you can't say that anymore. Like, you could say it if you're in traffic, and you're like, "Oh, that cab cut me off."
You can say that about a person if like they give blowjobs professionally. And they're proud of
their
career.
Right.
Like, for instance, like if you're...
And so the other caveat is that they're proud of their career.
Yeah.
And so they're not enslaved into that.
Exactly.
Okay.
Let's say you're Joe Buck talking about Clayton Kershaw. You have his balls in your mouth the entire time you're calling the game. Like, he's proud to do that for Clayton Kershaw and his curveball.
I understand now.
Seriously, it's tough watching Fox baseball, man.
Well, you know, as I said, cameras everywhere. You know where NBC's cameras weren't this week?
I fucking...
They weren't in Pittsburgh for one of two times. Sidney Crosby will play Connor McDavid this season, in theory, provided the health of both players.
It's so bad.
Yeah.
It's so bad.
NBC put on Buffalo and Detroit, two cities that, without question, move the needle locally as far as ratings go, which is the only thing NBC cares about, which is trying to save... Their season averages and trying to squeeze out whatever ratings points they can out of two American cities rather than showing the best player in the world and the heir apparent playing in a game that same night.
You mean Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl? I wouldn't say Leon Draisaitl is the heir apparent at this point. He only had one good season.
He's the best player in the world still.
Yeah. PHWA voters said differently, Greg.
Did they?
As recently as last season.
Ah, no, that, you see, that's a common misconception. The Hart Trophy is not for best player in the world. It's for most valuable to his team.
Oh, boy.
Sidney Crosby is blessed on being a team with many good players.
Mm. No. Much like Jose Altuve in baseball.
Not Milan Lucic.
And Aaron Judge isn't. I'm not going to make this a baseball podcast, but
everybody had their say on this, and we'll say it too. It's a fucking disgrace. It's a disgrace.
Oh, it's so dumb
that the rights holder for the NHL in the United States doesn't have Sidney Crosby versus Connor McDavid. Again, it's not Crosby versus Matthews or Matthews versus Eichel. It's not a situation where you have a multitude of matchups between these two superstar players during a season. These guys don't see – they're in different conferences. You have a responsibility to show every time those two players play. Now, if you're like, well, shit, man, Connor got hurt his rookie year. He wouldn't have been in this game, whatever. That's the risk you run. You have to show that game. Mm-hmm. It's – you just have to.
I mean, I feel like we shouldn't talk about this for more than 9 seconds because I don't even know what else to say besides it's just stupid. What's stupid is me because – my editor at Vice, he's like, you want to do something on the Oilers slow start? And I was like, well, they're playing Pittsburgh tonight, so let me watch that game. I want to get a feel for them.
Yeah.
And at like 4 o'clock, I saw like Sean Gentile from
Pittsburgh Post.
I know Sporting News is my media go-to for Gentile. And I saw him quote tweet the NHL thing where he's like, yeah, it'd be great. This game is on national TV. And I was like,
yeah, but no. But hold on. The NHL thing, for the record, is the NHL's Twitter account of like millions upon millions of followers tweeting out Connor versus Sidney. You're going to want to watch this one.
Give me $140 for NHL.tv or your local center ice package.
Do you think that, hold on, like,
yeah, I do.
Sinister, do you think the sinister intention is that they put this on the pay-per-view because you have to get the center ice to watch it?
How long have you been around the NHL?
A long time.
And would you say that their motivation most times is just to get as much money out of people as possible in that exact moment?
I think it's also to try to get as many people to pay to go to games and watch the sport and increase the fan base, increase the customer base.
Well, based on the NHL attendance figures, every arena is like 95% or more.
That's right, baby.
Because those aren't fake numbers.
Those aren't.
People are going to Canucks games.
Oh, completely. I mean, it's not as if they've counted tickets distributed for the last 25 years, and that's how they gin up these attendance figures.
The problem with the NHL for years and years and years is that it's a niche sport. It's a regional sport. And the problem with the NHL is that it runs itself that way. If you're a national, or in this case, international sport, you don't think twice. You put Penguins Oilers on both times they play each other on national
you
TV. Put,
you get Russ and Durant on against each other every single time.
If you can put Oklahoma State and Golden State on national TV every time they play, you can put Edmonton and Pittsburgh on.
Like, besides the fact that now Edmonton, I mean, right now they're off to a bad start, but in theory they're going to be worth a damn at some point. And challenging for the cup final that you'll be showing on your very network come June.
But even if they're not, like, you still
have the two-time defending Stanley fucking Cup champions with Sidney Crosby on the team.
Right, like, whoever the Penguins play should be a marquee matchup anyway. And McDavid ties the game late.
Oh. I know.
Oh, they're just so bad at what they do.
And I flipped over and it's like, here's Detroit trying to get their shit together to see if they can score a goal.
That's Buffalo's first shot in 11 minutes.
Phil Housley wins his first game as Buffalo coach despite starting almost a month ago. Come on. You know?
It's a bad, unwatchable game, too. Just
first home game, I should say. Yeah, so NBC letting people down. Connor was pretty good in that game. I mean, the great thing about Connor versus Sid... versus Ovi back in the day, it's like they actually play against each other. Mm-hmm. Like their lines were matched for most of that game, and they were at a stalemate until Connor. Again, and it's funny, like I said, like, wow, about that McDavid goal, and someone's like, every player in the league can do that. I'm like, okay, but it was less than 3 minutes to go in the game against Matt Murray, who had stopped every other shot he had faced, and a dude made a play. Like, that's beautiful. Mm-hmm. That's what you want. Ever happens in hockey that the star player does that in a key moment. Right. And then it does happen, and unless you're watching it on one of the many pirated feeds that I'm sure people were using instead of paying for center ice last night.
If Connor McDavid falls in the woods and no one's around to see it, did it even happen?
Does Connor McDavid get the credit he deserves? Colon. My column?
My entire timeline Tuesday was videos of Austin Matthews with the easiest fucking back check in the history of back checking.
Yeah.
To catch Andrei Kopitar was one stride ahead of him with the puck, basically in front of his own net, and he caught him at the other blue line. The guy without the puck is always going to catch the guy with the puck in that situation. Oh, my God. They should teach this in hockey school.
This is incredible. Oh. Apparently, you can check backwards.
You can. Should we rename it Matthews checking instead of back checking? Has anyone ever done this before?
As you can see here, Palmerville came down the ice, then he got Austin'd by Granlund.
He Austin'd his stick from behind and then Austin'd the puck away, and then Matthews did the other way. Austin, Matthews, Leafs, Sens, game time, now.
The Golden Knights, as we do this podcast this week.
Sweet Golden Knights. 7-1.
Continue to roll. They beat the Blackhawks. I don't know, man. They're down to Oscar Dansk as their goalie. They're on the. I mean, I know that it's the homestand, and I think there's a lot of that inherent in this start.
You think like Jonathan Toews and Patrick Kane were at a craps table till like 5 a.m. the day before?
Oh, I think the Vegas flu is a very real thing, but I think we need at least 2 months before determining what that means.
They're not going to make the playoffs.
I don't think it's Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews we have to worry about. I was talking to somebody the other day.
Ryan Hartman?
I was talking to somebody, not Ryan. What? Wait, hold on. Let me finish.
Okay.
I was talking to somebody the other day, and I'm like,
you and your sources.
Let me throw this by you. It's a gentleman who works for an international publication.
Oh.
And I said, dude, let me roll this by you. Do you think the European guys that have never been to Las Vegas are going to get the Vegas flu?
Like our buddy. Remember our buddy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Or our buddy that we met from Finland.
Yeah. He was up to like 5 in the morning, not even gambling. He just hanging out.
And he said, yeah. That's why my pet theory, and again, we're going to need at least 2 months before we can really determine this, is not to worry about Patrick Kane, which may be the first time that sentence has ever been uttered.
No, you should still worry about Patrick Kane.
But worry more about the European guys that are going to fly in there at night, and they're going to hear U2's City of Blinding Light playing in their heads as they drive down on the team bus to whatever hotel they're staying in. And then they go out, and then they're out until 5 in the morning.
They're
genieing the lock on their door to get back in, Alex Radulov style, after they break curfew.
All right, so they beat Buffalo in overtime. Detroit. Detroit's like European Central, and Detroit kind of throttled them. Zetterberg. Oh, you okay?
Yeah, I'm still off the chair.
Zetterberg.
Yeah, but they're old Europeans on Detroit.
Oh, like old guys don't want to get tanked and play cards.
Zetterberg's been to the NHL Awards. He doesn't give a shit about Vegas.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
That is a good point, Mikey.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Good point. Good point.
Henrik Zetterberg is not up until 5 in the morning playing craps. Henrik Zetterberg is tucked into his bed, king size, sheets fitted, and he's got the pay-per-view channel on to will him to sleep with Mario Lopez telling you what's on extra.
You think he sleeps on the covers over or under?
Under the covers, Mikey. And Jeff Blashill comes in and tucks him in.
Like Vegas is the anti-Rangers because Vegas has a bunch of home games in October and they're winning them. Mm-hmm. Rangers have a bunch of home games in October and they're pooping their pants every night. And now Vegas is
Mr. Poopy Pants.
You don't make the playoffs in October, but you can miss the playoffs in October.
Mm-hmm.
And Vegas is not missing the playoffs as of yet because they've gotten 14 out of 16
points. They've banked some points.
Yeah, like, it's one thing when you're bad.
I mean,
the points.
Legitimately, we are all waiting for the bottom to drop out. And again, I still think the most fascinating thing about the start is that if they are actually good, are the Golden Knights actually good? T-shirt, coffee mug. I think the real question is as we get deeper into the season and someone comes to call in for James Neal, like, are they like, no?
I have to. Have to get everything they can for James Neal.
There's a plan. There's a plan in place, but what happens to that plan if they're actually good?
Do I really look like a guy with a plan?
Do I really look like a guy with a plan? The guy who would trade Philip Forsberg for Martin Hirot?
The problem is going to be that they're banking points and then they're going to fade and they're not going to fade far enough back to get like a top two pick. They're going to pick like eighth.
Yeah.
And they're going to get a guy that's not really a difference
ultimately,
maker.
I think that Foley, the owner, for those who don't know, is probably happy that they're lighting the city on fire right now and getting people really excited about the team. I'm sure it's helped every merch sales, ticket sales, everything. Like, I'm sure he would, even if it may ultimately fuck with the process, like the idea of going into that market and immediately making that impact rather than being like 1-14 to start the season, like an expansion team should be. Like, I think he wouldn't trade this for the world.
But like, but if all the tickets were sold already, I mean, you're not selling more season ticket packages, right? Like, people are still going to show up from like other cities to hang out and drink and stuff. I wonder what the crowds were like for the Chicago game. Like, I wonder if that was mostly Blackhawks fans because it was mostly Red Wings fans. It was mostly Bruins fans.
Well, I gotta tell you, if all the tickets are sold for the game that you want to go to in Vegas, there's only one place to turn, my friend.
What? Where?
Our friends at SeatGeek. Let's say you're a fan of the Blackhawks and you were there to watch them play Vegas and you're like, I want to go to a game. You walk up to the box office. You're like, no, my friend. The Golden Knights are the hottest ticket in town outside of Carrot Top and perhaps David Copperfield.
Celine Dion. She probably does all right there.
I'm sure she
Lady
does.
Gaga.
I'm sure Britney does great too.
Lady Gaga's probably doing well.
There. If you want to get tickets, you must look elsewhere. Well, elsewhere, my friend, is SeatGeek. There's nothing like seeing your favorite team or musician in person. And buying tickets to sporting events and concerts can be very complicated, but there is a better, simpler way to buy with SeatGeek. They have a seamless mobile experience that lets you buy and sell tickets in just two taps. And by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and grading each ticket based on value, SeatGeek helps you find the best seats for the best price. Fully guaranteed, by the way. I've got the app on my phone. It's by far the easiest way I've found to shop for tickets. Hockey tickets, maybe a little Devils action going on this year. You get to see exactly what the best deals are.
Are you going there?
So the Devils?
No, for the Devils, Vegas and Vegas. Are you going to go?
I don't know. I'm debating it. I'm debating whether or not to go. I might go as a fan.
You want to go back. I know you do.
I want to go back. I wanted to go back the minute my plane landed back here.
You left too early.
Yeah. I could be anywhere with just a few taps. I can instantly find seats. Best of all, listeners to Puck Soup get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app today. Enter the promo code SOUP. That spells soup. And you can get $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. Again, we love when you guys and girls go to these games on the SeatGeek deal, tweet us the photos, at them on the Twitters, because you know what? At the end of the day, they really like it too. And it helps us continue to get...
Makes us look great.
Makes us look awesome. Promo code SOUP for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. Download the app today. That is SeatGeek, ladies and gentlemen.
Mm-hmm. Vegas. Vegas, man.
Vegas, baby.
Love it. I want to go back. Right now.
Speaking of the Golden Knights, Gerard Gallant, in my opinion, and I shared my opinion on ESPN.com.
Yes.
ESPN.com.
Yeah.
This week is one of the people that is mending his reputation, reversing course, fixing what was broken as far as the perception of him. Fired after 22 games by the Florida Panthers. The last time we saw him, he was waiting for the cab of shame. And then he goes to Vegas. We figure, all right, that's fine. We'll see you in 3 years when that team's worth a shit. And then lo and behold, like, he's orchestrating one of the greatest stories in sports right now.
I never thought he was a bad coach. I always thought it was weird that, like, he would go to Vegas. I remember when he got fired, everyone's like, whoa, he's going to Vegas. And I was like, yeah, chill, bro. He's gonna take a real NHL job. And then, like, 2 months later, hey, I'm happy to report I'm coming to Vegas. It's still too early for me to kind of give him tons of credit because they're not like they're winning all their games at home. They're not really their possession numbers aren't great, but like yeah, 7-1.
Mm-hmm.
You can't say anything bad about them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can, but you'd be wrong.
Well, there's a couple other coaches that I want to get your take on that are in kind of that same boat.
Oh, we can finally get to my. Well, go ahead, do it.
Jared Bednar.
Yeah.
So I think in one way, Jared Bednar is. Continuing the grand tradition of Colorado Avalanche coaches that are made to look great based on how well his goaltender is playing.
missed most of the season last year.
Yeah, like Varley's won some games for them, and his save percentage at last count was near like 930 in like six games. Like, mm-hmm. He's playing really well.
Right.
But I also think that, you know, I felt Bednar won at every level, and I was kind of a fan of this guy. And I felt like last year was such, I mean, like, what the fuck are you supposed to do in that situation?
He got hired in like October.
Yeah,
you know? He had no time.
Patrick Waugh lost his smile. He quits the team. Bednar gets on board and has a very short runway to get to know that roster and get to know those players. And I feel like he's more in control of that team right now. He's making better decisions with that roster right now. And he's managed, and I think Duchesne probably deserves credit on this as well, to put out the Matt Duchesne fire and not have that be a lingering distraction at least through the first month of the season. And as a result, they're all right. They're like kind of middling but not disastrous, and I think that's the best you could hope for Colorado at this point.
But like that's like my goal in life is to like set the bar so low for myself that when I achieve mediocrity, people are like, "Wow, great job by Dave Lozo. He's amazing." It's like, "Are you sure he's just not really terrible and you're just kind of like lowering the bar?" No, you don't see the job he's doing.
Oh my god, the last time I saw Dave, like he looked like a 48-point team. But now it's like maybe, I don't know, like 500?
I mean, he could be like a 79-point team.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, that's pretty great.
Like, he's a lottery team, but like the outer skirts of the lottery, not like the most balls.
And someone's like, wait, the most balls?
I was waiting for that.
What am I Randy Marsh when he gives himself the testicular cancer on South Park? Yeah. I'm going to give that one like a incomplete. I'm not ready to judge yet.
All right. But fair enough.
Should we do the one where you were pretty harsh?
John Hines.
Who's the guy that yelled at you last year? Remember we had the
John Hines is
was an email
like
a military
man,
guy,
like the Paul Heyman of John Hines.
But he was like an army guy. Like he signed this thing like Canadian ROTC or something.
Like he wasn't his agent, but he was kind of his manager.
Why do you hate the troops, Greg?
Well,
specifically the Canadian troops.
I'm trying to figure out this about Hines, and I'm fully willing to give him a mea culpa if I'm wrong about him. This is still a team that's shooting percentage is way out of whack as far as what it'll end up being.
Yeah, their PDO is like 103.
They're like third in the league right now in PDO.
Mm-hmm.
Their goals for per game is ridiculous. It's like 3.75 compared to 2.20
mm-hmm.
Basically on average under Hines in the last two seasons.
The Nico Mojo effect. Come on.
Yeah, I mean like there's when you think about this Devils team.
Don't temper your enthusiasm.
Do you think that it is a situation where he finally has the personnel to fit the system even though the system is still giving you less than stellar possession numbers, or do you think it's a case that just like they're playing completely over their heads right now and it'll all even out and then Hines will be fired after the year?
I think it's kind of more the second one just because it's just such a crap defense group. Like I can't trust a Ben Lovejoy, Damon Severson led group. Andy Green, over 82 games to get me 96, 97 points. Mm-hmm. The forwards aren't bad.
Forwards are good.
Forwards are fine.
Yeah.
They're going to get Travis Zajac back. Who
Pavel Zacha was good for a minute.
Yeah, like Pavel Zacha shows up every now and again. Nico finally scored a goal.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I go back to those first 2 years with John Hines where he was trotting out like Sergei Kalinin and Jordan Tutu on the power play. That's how little talent they had, where they had to throw those guys out there.
Mm-hmm.
And now Corey Schneider, of course, after carrying the team during those 2 years, is like, I'm exhausted.
Yeah.
I can't do this anymore. And now you have to rely on freaking Keith Kincaid. So
Corey, why don't you, let a few by? There's this kid Austin Matthews that we've got our eye on. No, I've got pride. And then last year, whoops.
Corey Schneider's save percentage, since I wrote a thing about him in the middle of, I think, last season, or was it 2 seasons ago, whenever it was, I wrote about him as like a Hart Trophy. I'm like, look at this team and look what he's done.
Right, when they were in the playoff line. I remember that.
And then they played the Flyers one night and he gave up 6 goals. And I think his save percentage since then is like 852.
Mm-hmm. Ah.
I've run him into the ground.
Dave Hextall. What do you think about that reputation? That's a guy who I think has been unfairly maligned in that city because I think he's a good coach. And that might just be me cheerleading to have the NCAA guy do well so more NCAA guys get their shot.
Why? What do you care about NCAA?
Because I like the – listen, as a blogger who now works for ESPN, I don't like the idea of people just because of where they came from not getting gigs. And I feel like there's a lot of that when it comes to – like it's a copycat league. Like one AHL coach does well. They all get hired. One NCAA coach says, well, they all get hired. Like, that's what I want.
I just think it's his haircut. I just think Dave Hextall has great hair.
He's amazing.
Like, if I were to have hair, I think I would pick... I would go Jack Capuano's hair for his age now, and then, like, when I was Dave Hextall's age, I'd go with the Dave Hextall
hair. Looks like...
TV hair.
In 1980s or 90s corporate thriller, maybe based on a Grisham book.
Oh, yeah. He's like Mike Douglas in Wall Street.
He kind of looks like the guy at the company or the law firm that it turns out is the villain.
He's the guy that tells Wilford Brimley where to catch Tom Cruise as he's running through the
right,
law
he's
offices.
The Weasley guy, right. He's the guy that Tom Cruise befriends in the company. And then, like, when push comes to shove, and, like, the president of the company, Gene Hackman or whatever, is like, we got to find this guy. He has the secret file. And then Dave Hextall's like, I know where to find him.
No, it's not even like that. Like, they have him, like, sitting in an office, and, like, they've surrounded him. Like, you have, like, Wilford Brimley's on one side of him. Gene Hackman's on the other side of him.
Don't fucking
and he's
tell
like,
me where that guy is. I'm going to put quick roach down your fucking throat.
You know your wife's home alone right now there, Dave.
That's right.
That's my Wilford Brimley impression.
That's great. That's a great Wilford Brimley. But that's the villainous Wilford Brimley.
Right. I have a bad feeling your children are not going to be home later if you don't tell me where he is.
How did he become like the go-to villain, by the way, at some point? Like he was like...
That was a big deal back then.
He was in Cocoon.
Yeah,
he was And everybody loved him. He was a happy grandpa.
Oatmeal.
And then he was like on TV as a happy grandpa and he was doing the oatmeal commercials. Then all of a sudden he becomes like Darth Maul in the firm.
Like that, like, I don't even know what the equivalent is for modern movies. Like back then, Wilford Brimley showing up as like the bad guy in a Tom Cruise movie was so insane. I don't even, like, it would be like if Alex Trebek became a bad guy in like a Bruce Willis movie.
He did play a man in black on The X-Files, Alex Trebek. There was an episode where he and Jesse Ventura were men in black.
Really?
Yeah, it was pretty great.
But like picture like Alex Trebek like sending henchmen after people, like the guy from Jeopardy, the guy who does that health insurance commercials, like that guy, like that was Wilford. What were we talking about, Dave Haxtell?
Judd Hirsch. if Judd Hirsch was like all of a sudden a villain in a movie, it would be like that.
But like Judd Hirsch has been in stuff. Like what was Wilford Brimley in before he did the oatmeal stuff?
He was in Cocoon.
But like what was he in before that? Like was he like a young, like, you know what I mean?
I wasn't fucking born yet.
But like, you know how like Leslie Nielsen like became like a comedy actor,
right?
But he was like a dramatic old Western guy. Like was Wilford Brimley like a Western guy back then? Oh, let's not look this up. We only have this room for 2 hours.
Give me a moment.
Here, I'll vamp.
Wilford Brimley.
Like you don't understand what it was like to see this jolly old fat man who sold you oatmeal that made your heart better. Trying to torture Tom Cruise's
family. And then the other
family thing,
too, he became a heavy after he had diabetes.
Oh, is that what he... Oh, oatmeal was for the diabetes.
He was in The Thing, and I don't think he was a bad guy in The Thing, but it was like everybody in The Thing was like one of those deals where like, oh, is that guy The Thing or not?
What was that, 84?
82.
82, Jesus.
But he was in Cocoon, and he was a great old grandpa, and everybody loved him. And he was in The Firm as the bad guy. But okay, so let me go ahead back to... He was Brubaker... So I guess he was kind of heavy in that.
Oh, the Robert Redford prison movie?
Absence of Malice. Maybe he was always kind of a shit heel, but we didn't know about it because we were too young.
We grew up as him. He was the mustache oatmeal guy.
We knew him from Cocoon on. Yeah, he was in a lot of movies that sound like 10 to Midnight with fucking Charles Bronson. Like, he might have been an asshole and we just didn't know it. Because, of course, The Natural! Remember he was Pop Fisher in The Natural?
He was the manager, right?
Yeah, and like he's a decent dude there. So The Natural was the turning point maybe where he
maybe
went from
Judd Hirsch,
a shitheel.
Judd Hirsch might be a good one.
And to being in Cocoon, and then all of a sudden he became a shitheel. He was in fucking the second Ewok movie.
What's the second Ewok movie?
So the first Ewok movie was the Ewok Adventure, and they made a second one called Ewoks: The Battle of Endor. And he literally played like grandpa in that movie.
Wait. There's like a spin-off Star Wars thing with just Ewoks?
There were TV movies with just Ewoks called
no
The Ewok
kidding.
Adventure and then Ewoks: The Battle of Endor.
There was a movie about Ewoks: That's disgusting.
Yeah,
it was
furry.
Oh.
Small and furry.
That's my impression of
it. Was
Ewok
an Ewok
taking a dump?
Yeah, I'll do an Ewok. Ewok taking a dump, ready?
Splash.
Yeah, Wilford Brimley was grandpa, and then he became... All right.
Judd Hirsch, yeah.
So that's
name.
NHL coaches.
You're going to kill my David?
And
I'm going to kill my David.
Do you know the name Ngozi Ukazu? Most likely not. Ngozi is a comic artist who many people have been asking us to get on this show. She's really brilliant. She does a comic called Check, Please. And if you've not heard of it, it is, in fact, a hockey comic book.
It's about Thomas Plekanec.
It is about...
And how he always has good manners.
Czech, not like Czech Republic, like Czech. it's pretty amazing. I mean, not only that there is a hockey comic, but also because it's super funny and super sweet. It's about a gay player who was a figure skater who then goes to college and decides to play hockey and learns about what it's like to play hockey, learns about bro culture. It sounds like it might be like a movie of the week kind of deal, but it's... Not. It's super funny and super sweet. He's a guy who bakes when he's stressed. And it's all about his sort of interaction with the team. And it's a coming of age thing. He's also a vlogger. There's a whole action part of it, too. But the cool thing about Ngozi is that she funded this thing through Kickstarter. And it became a sensation in the amount of money she got for doing this comic. And it was sort of a reminder that if you do something original and you do something that serves an audience that's been completely underserved, in this case, you know, queer hockey fans and women, that you can succeed at it if the stuff you're making is really cool and inventive and entertaining. So I sat down with her at Comic-Con here in New York to talk about her career, about the comic, about hockey in general, and how she came to be writing a hockey comic. Fuck, man. Like, I had to.
Is it a comic or a graphic novel?
It's not a graphic novel.
I don't want to get anybody upset because people get mad when you call a graphic novel a comic.
And she was on Artist Alley, and I was supposed to talk to her at a certain time. I had to wait a few hours to do so because the line to meet her was that long. Like, she's got an incredible dedicated following for Check, Please. And it's a cool chat. I think you'll dig it. It's the kind of different thing that we like to do here on Puck Soup. And we'll be back after this. I am astounded by your success.
Oh, my God. Thank you.
It's amazing. Yeah. I'm so proud of you. Do you ever come to one of these and when you see lines wrapping around to meet you and sign things, still pinch yourself?
It's very strange, because when it comes down to it, it's a comic about hockey, which is not the most popular sport in America. It's a comic about hockey and, like, baking pies, which, you know, when you pitch that to editors, they kind of look at you funny. It's great. I think people just wanted people just want, like, a fun, like, uplifting story, and I think that's why they line up.
You and I think are simpatico in the sense that, like, you know, I've always said this about hockey. Like you said, hockey is a tough sport to get into.
Yeah.
So you have to kind of create as many entry points as you possibly can. So now you've created an entry point for queer readers. Now you've created an entry point for
women.
Yeah. And I think that to read some of the reactions to your work and hear people being like, I could give a shit about hockey, but now you made me give a shit about it is amazing.
Yeah, it's kind of showing people that hockey as a sport is so fascinating because it is so strange. It's and kind of motivating them to, like, go out to a game, actually go out on the ice, and check out players because they're, like, awkward and weird and, like, kind of funny and weirdly stoic, and it's a whole different culture. I know for me, growing up in, like, Houston, Texas, learning about all of this, like, all these, like, Canadian players and, like, the culture of hockey in the Northeast, like, it was so bizarre that I just had to, like, tell other people, like, check out this really weird thing.
So you got into hockey at Yale, Is that the way I understand it?
Yeah. So my senior year of college, I wrote a screenplay on hockey. I wrote a screenplay on hockey, and I did a ton of research. And I had all this leftover knowledge. And then I went straight to art school, and then I decided to do this webcomic with all that knowledge. And I did all, like, it was, like, January 1st, let's say, and I just started doing research on hockey. And at the end of the semester, Yale won the NCAA Division I National, like, Hockey Championship, and I was like, this is a sign. Like, I'm doing the right thing right now, and you can tell me anything. All I would talk about was hockey.
So if they lost, this whole thing could be different.
They had never gotten that far anyway, so it was, like, just the fact that they made it, like, that far in the playoffs, that was astounding. So, yeah.
Did you see hockey as a perfect sort of medium for the stories you wanted to tell, the themes you wanted to introduce? Like, was it like, did you see it as that sort of vessel, or was hockey just something that sparked the other part of it, the other creative side of it?
I think kind of both, because hockey, I've always been interested in telling stories about, like, found families and, like, telling stories about college, and I always wanted to tell a story kind of that was dealing with the fragile nature of masculinity. And when hockey kind of arrived as, like, a subject, I was like, oh, perfect. Like, let's take the most, like masculine tough guy sport and, like, start to explore how people conform or don't conform to that.
Right. Yeah. And I've heard you mention that, like, Biddy and Jack, like, Jack's the unapproachable masculine. He doesn't, you know, Biddy doesn't really understand it.
And then
Biddy's sort of the more sensitive side to it. And it's like the two sides of the coin. And I think, hockey works as that sort of symbolic thing, right?
Yeah, it's a thing that for Jack, because he has to, like, live up to his father's expectations, he suffers from it, and he suffers from those expectations that he places on himself. And for Biddy, he's also living up to his father's expectations of, like, you have to be a man, junior, because he's from the South.
Right.
And he suffers from that as well. So I think both, they're, like, both sides of the same coin of, like, guys trying to navigate what it means to be a man. That's overly deep. I wasn't thinking about any of this when I started the comic.
It's totally,
I was
perfect.
Like, pies and guys.
All right, let's talk about stress eating. Now,
okay,
or stress baking, I should say, actually, would be more the appropriate
was that
thing.
A Freudian slip?
Where did stress baking come from?
Stress baking is something, like, I saw my friends do in college.
Really?
Like, oh, I have 3 essays due this weekend. I'm going to bake cookies for everyone in the suite. Like, just, it's just, like, this, like, really funny coping mechanism. Well, it's not a great coping mechanism, but I thought it was pretty amusing.
This is what I missed out on by not being smart. Like, I went to Maryland. Not saying that wasn't a smart
Maryland's
school.
Great.
Maryland's a great school.
Yeah.
But I don't think we had an oven in our suite.
Yeah,
we had a microwave oven.
We didn't have an oven in our suite, but we had, like, student kitchens that people would just, like, wander off to instead of going to the library.
Oh, that makes sense then.
You know, it's that thing of, like, sleep, study, socialize, choose to.
Right.
Then, yeah, some people just chose sleeping and baking.
I think the stress baking thing is a great character aesthetic.
Yeah.
Where did the vlogger thing come in?
I don't know, actually. I think it was just, like, it kind of, as I was developing the character, I thought the character would be like maybe a blogger, and then when I realized it was a digital medium, I mean a visual medium, I just decided to make him talk directly to the reader, which was a really lucky choice because I feel like people do connect with Binny because he's like, hey y'all, like welcome to the story.
And it's like, it's a different way to do, I mean, like, you know, for decades Spider-Man's, you know, his thoughts have been on the page and everything, but he's not speaking to you.
Yeah.
Sort of just speaking to him, say, Peter, don't do this kind of thing.
Yeah.
This is more of a Deadpool. Breaking the fourth wall kind of Deadpool thing, right, talking directly to the reader. Yeah.
Biddy's just like Deadpool.
It works great. Yeah. It's a really cool mechanism.
I was being facetious, but he's not like Deadpool.
Both characters very similar.
Yeah.
It's totally similar.
Yeah.
Just, well, I mean, Deadpool's cool.
They would probably get along.
They have a lot in common.
They do. They would talk a lot for hours. It'd be a therapy session. I love this fan fiction we're writing.
Well, I was going to say that too. Like, I remember you saying somewhere that, like, you know, not only do people, you know, take your work and trade it around on Tumblr and stuff, but now you have an entire, like, slash fiction sort of aesthetic going on with these characters too. Yeah.
Like, I remember the first fan fiction I ever got, I, like, wrote to the person, like, thank you, why are you doing this? How is this possible? And then now, like, people just, you know, have written novellas that are like tangential to the comic, and it's wild.
Right.
I love world building, and I'm glad that people can play in that world.
You do a hell of a lot of world building with Checkpoints, because the whole notion of like the character Tumblr thing is something I find really fascinating, because now you're taking these characters, they have their own Tumblrs, they have their own social kind of outreach, but like people are going to them to then get teasers about how the stories are going to play out. That's insane.
That was really, and that consumed so much of my life when I was like, I was logging on every day to like logging on to Twitter to like tweet as these characters, and people would say like, oh my god, hey, I just saw this new Beyonce video, and then I would be Biddy. I would put on his like face, like a mask, and then say like, yeah, like I'm Biddy and I saw the video too, and then people would just be like, I can't believe this happened. It's a fun aspect. It makes the characters more real.
The hockey shit segments.
Yes. What do you think about those?
I think they're fantastic
fan.
Because I think what they do is, I think that you've really drilled down to the things that you need to know about hockey. Like the X's and O's shit, we can leave to the Canadians. but for us, it's like hockey butts.
Yeah.
Sillies.
Yeah, like nicknames. And all that stuff.
Where did that mechanism come into play?
I mean, I just wanted to explain to people like why this is such a weird sport. So I really want to get that out there. But also, I feel like people just needed to understand there's no way they would ever like kind of stumble onto these different idiosyncrasies of hockey by themselves. So I was like, okay, in order for you to get this story, we have to go deep into hockey shit and learn about all these little facts.
So it sounds like you did your homework on all this. Like it sounds like who were you relying on, or were you relying on yourself to figure out the authentic hockey parts of Checkpoints?
I think I was scared of messing up, because I didn't want anyone to read the comic and be like, well, that's not how it works. So when I first started doing my screenplay, I watched a ton of documentaries on hockey.
What was the screenplay about, by the way?
Oh, the screenplay I wrote, it was called Hardy, and it was kind of like a spiritual precursor to Checkpoints. It was about like this big, brutish, like Boston enforcer guy who's in college who falls in love with his best friend. He's like, oh no, what's this? Internalized homophobia. Except he doesn't really, he's one of the main things is like he is very bad at communicating, so it's just like, I don't know how I feel. he's a fun character. But in order to get all that, like, I watched some documentaries. I watched, like, NHL 24/7, like over and over again.
Right.
I went on YouTube and, like, I went to the library to check out books on hockey. There were, like, ethnographies on hockey. But I also did a lot of interviews. I interviewed, roommates of hockey players for like Yale's team, like girlfriends of people who, like people who played hockey, like a ton of people. I interviewed a current AHL player, one of my friends, who was just like just would say all the weirdest things that ended up like he would just talk about how like much his hands were like calloused, and I was like, there's like stuff like little details like that that I thought were like, just to add the story.
What surprised you? You mentioned before the sort of found family aspect of it. Did you understand that as being part of hockey, or was there anything about your in your research that surprised you about the sport?
I think something that surprised me, or like that I kind of had to relearn, was the devotion that I mean, not just fans have the hockey, but hockey players. It's like a reverence. It's a reverence. Yeah. You know how people say, like, ball is life, and it's kind of like, ha, ha, ha. It's a joke. It is literally, like, it's when you're on the rink, it's church.
Yeah.
And you are going there to, like, worship the puck, worship the ice, and play.
And it's the same thing where fans go to the arena. That's their temple.
It's exactly.
For that, you know, 3 hours.
And I think part of the research was almost, it was a respect, too, because even though it's a culture that I know has a lot of problems, and I know that I necessarily may not belong, I wanted to respect it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you've done a really good job sort of broadening, embiggening the tent, if you will.
Embiggening the tent.
Embiggening
the
tent.
Yeah, there you go.
For people to approach hockey. What's been your interaction with folks when it comes to the hockey parts of the book? Like we talked about before, you're making new fans, or people, do you have hockey fans being like, I can't believe how well you've got this? Or maybe more to the point, like, I can't believe I'd never thought of it this way before.
Oh, I can't say that a lot of people say kind of that latter statement, but it's really a lot of people who used to play hockey either in high school or college, and they tend to be like women athletes who are just like, yeah, you got it. Like, this is what this is. This is how bros are. This is how it's stupid. Yeah, I don't find a lot. I mean, people have thought of the story of, like, former figure skater joining a college hockey team is very, like, Disney Channel, so I'm not the first person to think of
it. It's also very cutting edge the other way. It's reverse cutting edge.
I think it is, yeah. Okay. Anyway, I haven't seen that.
I want to say I've seen it many moons ago,
okay,
but it's not
cool.
One of those movies that resonates within the hockey community.
Yeah, I watched, like, it was Slapshot, Miracle on Ice, and, like, what is it? Oh, my God. Goon. Those were movies
Well,
that I
the thing, like you said before, like, using 24/7 as a touchstone for your work is perfect, because that's
such a good series.
I mean, you duck into the hotel or you see Sidney Crosby in bed just shitting around with his buddy in the hotel room. I mean, that's the essence
that's
of life on the road and everything else.
Yeah.
Have you heard from any gay players?
Yeah. Yes, and like I hear from queer athletes from like high school. College, and I can't say that I've like spoken with professional athletes who are like, I mean, because it's a lot more risky to do something like that.
Yeah.
But I think athletes in college who are more comfortable with themselves definitely reach out and say some of them aren't even hockey players. It's like, oh, I row crew, or I'm in track, and like this is what your comic means. So
yeah, I mean, we should say that your main character is closeted to his team in a relationship with the captain.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
He eventually does come out, but it's something where I think people enjoy seeing like a character come out and then be accepted by the team, because that's their experiences. They're like, I came out to my team, and then
And I wanted to ask you about that, because I mean that's the thing I've heard time and time again from gay hockey players, is that you come out to your team, it doesn't leave the room, but everybody in the room is okay with it.
Yeah.
So why do you think it hasn't left the room? Why do you think that there hasn't been somebody to be the Jackie Robinson of queer hockey?
Oh my
players.
Gosh. Well, that'd be a whole nother interview, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Because I think there's so many things, even though hockey has weekend play, and even though guys are, go on the record saying like, oh yeah, I'd be fine if I had a teammate who was gay or whatever. It's their choice and it's not of my, but yeah, it won't leave the room until like the entire culture is like, we're ready to accept you. There's too much on the line for some of these players.
Do you think it's our fault in the media? Do you think we would make people feel like a bunch of assholes if they came out?
No, I think it's not just the media. It's literally the culture of hockey, from start to finish. Like, let's not show any pain. Let's be super stoic. Let's never show any emotion. Queerness would be political, and people are like, I don't want to be political, which is, a lot of BS, but...
Do you think your story has resonated with people because it is a coming-out story in some ways,
yeah.
And it is a love story in some ways, but it's also funny as shit. Like, it's not... It can be poignant, but it doesn't stop for the, this is a special issue kind of thing,
I think people, especially a lot of audiences are tired of, like, the... a lot of queer media, it's called like just tragedy porn, where the character is like coming out and they get beat up and then they get kicked out of their house, and these things do happen to real people, and those stories are very real, but I think people do want to just have stories about characters who are gay, and that is part of their identity, and they also get the big pies. So, yeah.
how do you feel being now? You're NPR's talking to you. EW is doing the thing on you. This is the year of you blowing up, I guess. Yeah.
It's been a whirlwind, and it's been really great, and it's just fantastic that people are learning about the comic that may not have logged on the Tumblr and found it. So
right.
I'm pretty psyched that new people are discovering it.
But you are an artist, and you are ending this thing after four years, right?
Done and done.
Was that always the plan?
Yeah, the summer I made the comic, I wrote like a little chart about what would happen like each year, and then it would be done.
The touch point for me was always British sitcoms. British sitcoms always end.
You ever watch Fawlty Towers?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's quality over quantity.
They know when to quit.
Yeah. Even Parks and Rec knew when to finish.
Yep.
Yeah.
Parks and Rec was interesting because it took me so long to catch up to it again because I hated the first season.
Oh, season one was
when they were trying to ape the office.
Yeah.
But then I quit, and then my now wife is like, "No, it's the funniest show you're ever going to see," and I got back into it, and it's
the British sitcoms. I know how to do it. Yeah, I don't want to make Spider-Man like check please issue like 756. So, Detective Comics, they're on like I don't know what issue they're
but
on.
That's the thing. You're in comics, you can do check please 2000.
No, check the 2000. They go to the future.
Yeah, exactly.
Biddy shoots pies out of his hand.
It's either the check please multiverse. Now they're lacrosse players. It could all be like that.
I mean, there's no point. I want to finish the story and have it be a moment in my life and then move on.
Do you know what you want to do next? Or?
Yeah, I'm working on a script about softball, girls softball. A bunch of art students try to win one game of softball to get their athletic scholarship.
Your
and not
classic
tuition.
Sports underdog
it's,
story.
It is very much like Shenanigans. Like none of them could catch the ball. One of them is like really, really good. Yeah. So
You're awesome. Congratulations on all your success.
Thank you so much.
My thanks to Ngozi Ukazu for joining us here on Puck Soup. Check Please can be found at checkpleasecomic.com for all the information there. And it's coming out in sort of it is out in a collected format. Do check it out, man. It's super funny and really comes at the sport in a different and interesting way, which if you've ever read Puck Daddy or my work at ESPN and have listened to this podcast, we're kind of fans of.
Is Ryan Lambert technically Puck Daddy now?
Yes! But I have renamed it Puck Dinosaurs, and most of the writing is based on what kind of dinosaur the players would be, Stegosaurus Kevin Bieksa.
Well, Ryan's coming here in December.
Yeah, we're going to get Ryan on. Honestly, I get asked all the time about Puck Daddy. Like, I was just doing a radio thing the other day. They're like, so what? Can you take the name? No, they own the name. That Puck Daddy isn't dead. Like, it's still there. I just feel like, when they find out that I'm leaving in September and now it's like almost the end of October, like, you got to give them a bit of runway to figure out exactly what the next steps are for that site. Like, I don't want it to not be good. Like, I want Yahoo to thrive and I want my old place to do well. It's not as if I'm sitting here saying that I want to bleed Yahoo dry.
You don't want to like drain their blood and suck the marrow from their bones.
Which brings us to another topic here on the show. There's actually a couple topics we're going to talk about, and we should preface it by saying that I work for ESPN. Dave does stuff for The Athletic. Please keep that in mind going forward.
For now, we do these two things. We'll see how this goes.
The Athletic made news this week because Alex Mather, a co-founder of the site, did an interview with the New York Times in which he said, "We will wait every local paper out and let them continuously bleed until we are the last one standing. We will suck them dry of their best talent at every moment. We will make business extremely difficult for them."
Mm-hmm.
Now,
yeah,
this didn't go over all that well, and then Alex responded with a statement that I wanted to clarify something. I'm not rooting for newspapers to fail. I mean, other than the whole sucking them dry of their blood and precious fluids thing, but rather hoping to build a product that will give readers more choices, whether it's in their local market or nationally. We are privileged to have incredible support from our passionate readers, and we could not do it without your backing. I do not take that for granted. We want to deliver a product that makes you proud, and we'll continue to work nonstop to do so. So I think, lesson learned when you go and say the timeline for The Athletic for me is The Athletic. Oh, this is an interesting new thing. Hey, your favorite writer that got laid off or is worried about their job, we're going to hire them.
Here they are.
That's fucking great. I love Mike Russo. Oh, by the way,
We're going to skull fuck the Star Tribune until it's dead.
And even after it's dead, for fun.
Yeah, and then you're like, wait a second, I didn't sign up for this.
Yeah.
Lesson learned, man. Like, I think this is a classic case, and we'll get to the ESPN example in a second, of A, not knowing what the reaction from your own employees is going to be, because I think a lot of people at The Athletic who are proud newspaper men and women did not appreciate the idea that their new venture was, you know, the goal was to put their old ventures out of business.
But at the same time, shouldn't they have known that already? Like,
I mean,
that's the,
I don't
the Athletic's
so, man,
a competitor.
Like, when I think of a local paper, I think of more than the sports section.
Yeah.
I feel like, to me, The Athletic's competition should be people like Bleacher Report and SB Nation, who they both trashed in that article, too.
That was the one thing that, like, so, like, I write for The Athletic once a week. I'm not, like, an employee full-time or anything, but, I felt like they just said the thing that we all kind of knew was true, where, like, The Athletic is newspapers are failing. The Athletic's taking the people that are talented that are getting laid off from newspapers because they don't know what they're doing, and they're trying to...
I think it was
knock them out.
That extra,
it was just how they said it.
It was the extra level of what's the word I'm looking for?
The blood imagery that wasn't.
It wasn't. I mean, it's sort of the stated goal to put them out of business. It was the problem with it. Even if he didn't really mean it to come off that way, the whole thing seemed. It was very much like a search and destroy thing, which to me comes from the fact that these guys aren't journalists, but they came from Silicon Valley, and in Silicon Valley,
yeah,
you know, the goal is not simply to make a great company, but to crush your competition. Like, it's not good enough to be the guy at Lyft that's like, I'm going to make Lyft. Lyft is going to be great. You have to be the guy at Lyft that's like,
all cab drivers will die penniless, right, and their families, right, will starve.
Right. And Uber, I will throw you off a cliff and piss on your remains. Like, that's the way it kind of works when you're in tech, and I feel like these guys were sort of tone deaf to the difference between those things.
Yeah, but I feel like they just said the thing we all kind of already knew. And it was weird too, because we all, like, we constantly see people getting laid off from newspapers, and we're always just like, fucking newspapers, these goddamn jagoffs firing talented people, pushing video on people. God, they drive me nuts. And then this guy's like, yeah, well, we're going to try and take them down. And someone's like, whoa, 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 hold on a second.
Right.
Why can't we just let them limp by forever? Like, no, that's not. It's like, what do you call it? The Players Tribune.
Yeah.
It drives me nuts when I see, like, media people retweeting the Players Tribune. Like, yeah, like, it's cute that you think that, like, Kevin Garnett or, you know, Logan Couture really wrote that. Like, no, like, They're trying to siphon off readership from you. Like, they're a competitor. Like, the player, no one from the Players Tribune has ever come out and said, we're going to drink the blood of newspaper people. But it's a business. Like, you can't. The thing that I thought was funny was people got mad about the empty calories comment.
Yeah.
I don't kid myself into believing anything I do is other than empty calories. I write about sports.
I think The Athletic, though,
it's a fine thing.
I mean, we're all coming to bat for that. Is like, there's a big ass difference between the stuff that, like, Justin Bourne or Dello or whoever writes versus, you know...
But it's empty calories.
A four-paragraph story on SB Nation with a YouTube.
Oh, like, for sure.
That's where I thought they were getting at there.
Oh, is that what they...
Yeah.
I didn't really know. Because, like, in my mind, empty calories is just, like, unnecessary stuff you put in your body that feels good. Like, that's sports. Like, nothing you do in sports is really, like...
Well, I thought,
like,
empty calories was like you... Okay, so, like, I'm going to eat a head of lettuce to make my belly feel full, but it's not the thing I want to eat at all.
Well, no, like, I picture, like, empty calories as, like, a big old,
like, a
handful
beer
of jelly beans. Is what I was
a big old handful of jelly beans.
Yeah, like,
have
it's
you ever
just
taken a handful of jelly beans? That's a food that is designed to be eaten individually.
Disagree.
They have different flavors.
You combine flavors to make a delicious mix of candy in your
mouth. But if you take a handful of them, you've not spent any time to cultivate the flavors. You're just taking a fucking handful of candy.
Not like 30
in your mouth.
Not like 32 jelly, like three or four at once. You never just like, oh, a little yellow, green,
red. What
are
you, Trump? How small are your hands that's a handful? That's four jelly beans.
Well, well, when you say a mouthful of food, your mouth is not packed 100% density with food. It's just
so
a bunch of food.
Let me just get this straight.
Mm-hmm.
When you eat jelly beans, you're trying to match flavors. Is it like a Futuraca cycle on the Jetsons where these little pills come out and then you match them up like, oh, look, I got bacon and eggs. Is it that kind of thing? You take one jelly bean and another jelly bean and a third jelly bean and you're trying to create a little dish?
If I could have a bacon and egg jelly bean meal, I would absolutely do it.
Mm-hmm.
I would shove the pancakes, the bacon, the eggs, all those empty calories into my mouth. But your point is well taken, that, like, yeah, Justin Bourne breaking down why the Penguins power play sucks is not the same as, like, aggregating, but
Have you ever taken the jelly bean challenge?
What do you mean, like to guess the flavors?
Yeah, but they have ones now, and this is like my kid watches way too much YouTube. Or
Do I pour jelly beans over my head to like?
No, for charity. And you're like, oh my eyes. No, it's a thing where like the horrible dad who makes his children do YouTube videos so he can get ad revenue. We'll sit them down and Jelly Belly makes a thing where like there's like two jelly beans, they both look the same, but one is like grape and one is like dead fish. And the whole thing is they look exactly alike, so you have to taste them to know exactly which one it is. And it comes with like a little spinner that tells you which jelly bean to taste.
That seems mean.
Yeah.
They're like intentionally grossly flavored jelly beans?
Yeah, they're grossly flavored jelly beans, but they look like real ones.
What is wrong with
our
society?
So my kid likes to do this. Like occasionally she'll make me buy it and like because she wants to do like a YouTube video or whatever, like recreate a YouTube video, and then I'll sit down with her.
She wants the grower brand. I understand.
Yeah, and it's like, oh, is this cotton candy or spoiled milk? And then
I would never do that.
Like she'll spin it, and it'll be like, oh, it's either cotton candy or spoiled milk, and then she'll take it, and then she'll be like, you taste it. I'm like, that's not how the fucking game works.
I'm not growing my brand. We're growing your brand on YouTube. You gotta put it in your mouth.
And then I'll taste it. I'm like, it's cotton candy. She goes, okay, that one was mine. Your turn. This is horseshit. Like, what is this game?
This is bullshit.
Yeah, playing games with kids is fucked up. Like, they come up with these asinine rules that gin the game for them. Like, Chutes and Ladders is like a pretty basic game where, like, depending on what you spin, you move that many spaces and go up the ladder or down the chute or don't do anything at all. Except when you're playing with a kid who goes on the, you know, she gets all the way up to the top. Now she's on the big chute all the way to the bottom. And then she nudges the spinner over one so she doesn't actually get four, she gets three. And that's somehow legal.
Wow.
Now, I know as a parent, I should probably police this behavior.
You seem more upset about actually losing than having your daughter not yet learn winning and losing.
Well, it's a devil's bargain, really. Like, you're going to lose the game, but you're also going to make the kid not cry.
You got to find the middle ground there.
But at the same time, I feel like I'm raising a fucking megalomaniac who now believes she can do whatever she wants with rules and regulations.
Well, when she first does she play like competitive sports yet? Does she play like,
soccer? But I wouldn't call it competitive sports.
But when she like gives up a goal, does she like take the ball out of the net and go, "That's not a goal"?
No, but like I watched her play soccer last weekend, and she at one point she like hit a power up and took the ball away from three players and then scored a breakaway goal. And the rest of the game, she literally did nothing. She just stood there.
So she pulled an Alex Salmon?
Yeah, she was an Alex Salmon!
I got my goal.
Yeah!
I'm good.
And I said to her after the game, I'm like, why don't you always do that? She goes, because I don't always want to score. Like, holy shit! What is this? Is she a prodigy?
But like, see, this is the problem. You need to be sports dad more and like shame her. Be like, yeah, you need to score 24 goals in a game or...
feel bad about that.
Yeah.
All right. The other media news this week was Barstool Van Talk.
Van Talk.
Oh, it doesn't fucking matter. It's not on anymore.
BVT, as I called it.
Got canceled after one episode. I work for ESPN. I have no inside knowledge of anything. I merely wanted to mention that
you were a fan.
I liked the show. I thought it was I thought it was interesting. But ultimately, everybody who said it was going to be impossible to separate the Barstool brand from the show was completely right.
It had Barstool in the title. How could they ever do that?
Well, because I think maybe there was this notion that those two guys are kind of the exception to the rule in the eyes of a lot of people. People who listen to Pardon My Take say that's not Barstool.
Everybody says that, yeah.
Right, they all say it. So they bought that hype, but what they didn't realize was that there's a lot of bodies buried on the way to becoming the guys who aren't Barstool.
Yeah.
And so when Sam Ponder and Sarah Spain and others inside ESPN said, this is you can't run away from the shit that's been said, and you were complicit in laughing to when Portnoy was saying all this fucked up shit about me. Like you can't. The moment in which your own people are saying these things, much like The Athletic, where I'm sure a lot of people emailed the Up and Ups and said we're embarrassed by this. Like we don't want newspapers to go out of business. I think it becomes a situation of like we're embarrassed by this. We don't want to be associated with this brand, and then you have to kind of do it.
But like the thing I don't understand is like how no one at ESPN didn't see it coming.
I kind of get it. Like I kind of get the idea that you
I don't get that
you
at
believe
all.
That you can run away from a brand if you've taken the people that are not the exception to that rule. And that's the way that it was
sort of being pitched.
But like my thing is like I'm assuming those guys have contracts, right? So they just can't leave Barstool whenever they
said want. I listened to their podcast today about the whole thing because I've been kind of fascinated by it for various reasons, including the fact that I was at Bristol for rookie camp this week, and one of the first things they showed us was like kind of like, hey, here's what's going on at ESPN these days. And one of the things was like the fucking Barstool Van logo. And by the end of the day, the show wasn't on the air anymore. Like, boy, life comes at you fast. So I've been fascinated by it on that score, but also because I don't know what their side of the story is. And so, like, I listened to their podcast, and they said they had a contract for 22 weeks.
So they're still getting paid for 22 weeks, I assume, right?
I mean, I assume that. I don't know.
Like my feeling is like, okay, let's say they are not what Barstool is known for.
Mm-hmm.
They're, like, just two dudes who don't do, like, the Barstool type thing. Like, you don't want them to, like, never... Like, let's say like 2 years from now, they don't work for Barstool anymore. They still have a podcast. They still have Part of My Take, and it's under the Nerdist umbrella. Let's just say hypothetically. And then like someone gives them a show on Fox Sports. Like, are we going to punish them forever?
You're saying how many steps of separation there need to be?
Yeah, like because like if those two guys specifically haven't done anything awful, then like they shouldn't be punished forever because they once worked for Barstool. You know what I mean? But like I don't know. Like I get the other side of it, but like at some point you wanna, it's like Andrew Shaw. Like you don't wanna forever, you know, condemn Andrew Shaw if he's apologized and moved on and shown all, like if those two guys are really like that, you don't wanna have them never get a chance to do something.
Until
you know
that
what I
video
mean?
Comes out where it looks like Big Cat is mouthing a terrible thing about Sam Ponder's kid. And then we have to do an in full investigation to find out if he actually said it.
Here's the key. The key is going to be 2 years from now when those guys stop calling themselves PFT and Big Cat. Because it's so ridiculous to see like a press release that says like we're parting ways and we love what Big Cat has done. Like they have to go by their real names.
But a bit like to Big Cat's credit, man, like
that's part of it.
On their podcast today, he's like, I never ran away from it, man. Like Barstool's in my title.
Right.
You know?
Right. Like that's the part that sucks for them is like, they're like, okay, we're from Barstool. You know that, right? And ESPN's like, we sure do. And you understand what Barstool does, right? We absolutely do. We have the internet and we've read it. Okay, we're going to start working there. Okay, we work here now. Yeah, we have to let you go because you're from Barstool. What do you mean? We talked about this. It's in the contract.
I'll let John Skipper's statement stand for what it is. I don't want to get too deep down the rabbit hole because I kind of like my job.
Yeah, I don't want to have to come back here a week from now and be like, so Greg Wyshynski now is no longer part of ES. Like, it's just, it feels like they got fired for no reason, but there is an absolute reason, but it's not their reason. It's all tangled and...
Who do you think that they look better because of this, or do you think it's they might be pissed that it happened?
Who, ESPN?
No. I mean, Big Cat and PFT.
Do they feel like they look better because of this?
Do you think that they kind of get more street cred in the like too hot for ESPN thing, or do you think that they're pissed that they had a TV show that got knocked off the air because of past foibles?
Both. Yeah. Like it doesn't hurt them at all. I don't think it just sucks for them because like this could have been an opportunity for them, but again. If you don't work for Barstool, then you don't have to worry about it. But they have. So again, you can't be punished forever because you happen to work for.
I want to clarify something I just said before. Like I'll criticize ESPN when necessary. I don't think I could do it necessarily a lot here because it's sort of a business transaction.
Yeah, don't.
From
do
a
it.
Hockey perspective, like
I'll do it. Don't
if
do
you
it.
Guys if you guys have beef with anything hockey related on ESPN, I will fight the good fight. I'm on the inside now.
The bizarre thing with you now is like I love like a, so like I remember when I first started following Katie Nolan on Twitter. I would go to her timeline at the end of the day and like read all her tweets where she would like go back at trolls because it was just fun reading.
Yeah.
I do the same thing now for your Twitter account where I go back and read all your mentions. People are like, oh, ESPN lib Greg Wyshynski already. And I'm like, Greg literally said this like six times last year.
Oh, no, that's
my favorite thing.
The two weirdest things about the ESPN gig on top of being a 40-year-old man at something called Rookie Camp. Was
you're like Chris Wenke.
Yeah, I felt like Sergei Makarov.
Yeah. That's a hockey reference. That's better for
so
the podcast.
So I like the two weirdest things are one, writing and believing the same things I believed a month ago at Yahoo.
Yeah.
Restating them and then being like, ESPN has fucking corrupted you. They put you in the hypno chamber and made you say these things. And the other thing too, it's like tweeting out stories that I've written for ESPN about hockey and then having people come back and being like, well, this would have been fine, I guess, but ESPN doesn't care about hockey. I'm like, but they hired me and I'm writing the hockey for them.
They're paying me money to write about hockey. They must care to some extent.
Having spent about a week now in Bristol, I could tell you that there's so many hockey fans there. It's ridiculous. And again, like I said in the last episode, it's like they're all coming up to me and being like, free us, help us.
You're like Phoebe at Monica's bad party, trying to get everybody over to Chandler and Joey's place for the good party.
2 o'clock in the afternoon, we will all meet. We will all wear our sweaters. We will storm the gates. We'll make them put highlights on.
Like, never read your own mentions, but go to Greg's mentions and just read the guy who's like, oh, you're writing about Andrew Shaw. Typical ESPN libs.
But again, seriously, like any beef you got with ESPN or ESPN hockey, just let me know. And I'll try to get you info or defend the network or fall on my own sword.
Oh, I got one. Predators are the best national sports team.
That's like a franchise ranking they do every year, and I'm assuming it has some algorithm or what have you that determines that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It felt like it when I was at the Cup final.
You just show up at ESPN and suddenly the Patriots aren't the number one franchise anymore, Greg.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Number one quarterback.
They're going to be good forever. Yeah. Fucking Patriots.
Christian Hackenberg. Now, a lot of people are saying Hackenberg can't be the best quarterback because he's never thrown an NFL pass, but I happen to believe.
Number one, Jets. Number two, Devils.
I went apple picking on Sunday.
You missed a good game.
And the Jets were up 28-14, and then I got back to the car with 2 bushels of apples, and they had lost 31-28.
Well, what happened was they took the quarterback out who doesn't care about football anymore, right, and they put in the guy who had beat the Jets previously.
Yeah.
Uh-huh, yeah.
All right, we promised you some Bridge Galloff iTunes reviews. I will acquiesce and do them.
Bears. Bears.
This is from Joshko.
I can't describe how giddy I feel when Dave sighs. It is so deep and sensual. I can feel it deep in my loins.
Is this real? I don't remember reading this one.
I'm reading them off the page.
All right. Good for your loins.
This is from Kyle321N.
Great show. But I feel they glorify bears too much. Bears are not something to be trifled with. They roam our parks and eat small children.
And this is from someone who is called Pope Bridge, who left a rather lengthy one.
His Holiness Pope Bridge Galloff was pleased to learn that in an international group of hockey organizations has chosen formally to adopt the Declaration of Principles that emerged from last year's Global Conference on Sport at the Service of Humanity. His Holiness trusts that this significant gesture will inspire greatness for the pivotal role played by sports and sportsmanship in training future generations to pursue personal excellence and to promote the spiritual values of teamwork, solidarity, and mutual respect so necessary for the building of a more just and fraternal world.
Wow. People really abuse the privilege that we offer for this. Some of them were just left regular comments. Some of them, like, I think one guy put like a bunch of song lyrics there that you're going to have to do at some point.
Finally, Irish Vinny B.
Always a lot of fun. One of my favorite podcasts, even though there are no parks and because there are no bears.
There it is.
All right. Halloween is coming up next week as we do this podcast, which means, of course, that we have to do a Halloween-themed bit for your edification.
Have to.
This time we've decided instead of doing something that we did last year, which was, of course, Yummy in My Tummy, You're Only for a Dummy on Halloween candy. We noticed, the trend that I'm sure you all have noticed, which is the sexification of any and all costume. It began with sexy nurse. Mm-hmm. It continued with sexy maid. Now when I go to the costume store, there's an entire section of different people and professions.
They're all sexy.
Sexified.
They're all sexy.
So Dave and I present to you here on Puck Soup the top 10 least sexy costumes for 2017 Halloween. So if you're thinking of going as a sexy blank, mm-hmm, I said Bippy, then there's a match game reference for those who don't know, then please reconsider if you do hear your costume on this very list. Dave, why don't you go first?
All right, I'm stealing all of these from Twitter friend Holly_Hall. She kind of, it's kind of her brand. She just finds the worst sexy Halloween costumes. Mm-hmm. And like they're really ridiculous. They're really, really, really bad. But there are sexy girls wearing them, so it's not that bad. Number one or five.
Number five.
Sexy pancakes.
Sexy stack of pancakes.
It's a picture of a woman wearing like a black under like
leotard
thing. and she just has she's got pancakes.
Pancakes.
She has pancakes on her upper torso. That's. I mean, it's.
It looks like that could be sexy. The shape and outline of a sexy Big Mac as well.
Yeah.
Sexy anything of that.
Any sexy burger, but like this is it's a big old stack of like seven pancakes. Sexy pancakes.
Sexy pancakes. Number five for me is sexy Steve Bannon. Now look, he looks like a diseased sack of garbage. He looks like Baron Harkonnen from Dune put through a toxic waste bath. There's nothing sexy about him. I know that is sort of one of the goals of the sexy Halloween costume is to take something unsexy like a stack of pancakes, for example, and make it sexy. But I see no way that you could possibly do a sexy Steve Bannon. A sexy Milo I can see. But not a sexy Steve Bannon.
But like, what is sexy Steve Bannon? Is he wearing like a skin tight Klan outfit? Like it's like a really tight. It's not baggy and loose like the regular ones. Like what is his sexy version of his outfit? Like the hood is like skin tight.
Yeah,
you know, like a gimp outfit.
Like a gimp outfit.
Hmm.
What's number four for you?
Number four is a sexy computer hacker.
Oh well, what about Mr. Robot?
That's what it is.
Rami. Whatever the fuck.
It's no, but like you pretty much just wear like a hoodie.
Oh.
With your it's zipped down so you're showing a lot of cleavage and you just wear the stupid mask that
they wear. Oh, so it's literally like
that's it.
The computer hacker, it's when he's on the screen and being like,
"This is Mr. Robot.
I've never seen Mr. Robot.
This is Mr. Robot. I've taken over the televisions in Times Square or whatever."
Only sexy. By the way, Mr. Robot is the only show where for one season it was my favorite show, and then season two, I never got past like episode two.
This is very interesting information because you've then revealed that you've never seen the show Heroes, which was also that.
What was Heroes? Oh, the NBC
the superhero show that bit off all of their stuff from Watchmen, and then it was an amazing first season, and then in the second season it was just utter shit.
You're telling me a show that tried to copy one of the worst movies ever wasn't good?
It was a graphic novel before it was a movie.
Ah.
Number four for me, sexy fireman.
What's wrong with sexy? Wait, fireman or fire person?
Fireman.
So just a man. So,
yeah, like a sexy, like a man dressing like a sexy fireman.
You seem to be against the male sexiness. What's up?
Well,
with that?
I find it to be redundant. Like, what's the fucking point? A sexy fireman. Okay. A valorous knight. A corrupt politician. Like a fireman inherently is sexy. The idea that you would then, what, you took off the jacket and the shirt and you're just wearing suspenders and the hat, now you're a sexy fireman? A fireman is sexy to begin with.
See, all right, I grew up across the street from a firehouse in Harrison, New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody there was sexy. It's a bunch of fat old men.
They're all the fat old men. You think fat old men can... Yeah. First of all,
In a small town, they don't do much.
I don't want to offend our boys in blue, our brave men and women of the police. Firemen in better shape than police. Come on.
Oh... Yeah, I would
say. Yeah, huh?
Because like firemen work like 72-hour shifts and they just stay in the house for
three straight days
and don't work out.
Think of Kurt Russell in Backdraft. Now think of Andy Sipowicz from NYPD Blue. Now you're talking.
You're telling me you wouldn't have sex with Andy Sipowicz? Those short sleeves and that tie just bouncing up and down? Come on, that's hot.
I'll tell you why, because I brought this asshole in. He's an asshole on ABC.
Wait. And he showed his asshole on ABC. Ew. Wait, are we talking cops? Or detectives, because
he was a detective.
No,
that's a good point.
Lenny Brisco,
mm-hmm.
Sexiest man on TV for like 10 years.
Wait, did Sipowicz become a detective at some point, or was he always?
I never watched the show. The Silver Spoons guy.
Don't be a sexy fireman. It's redundant. Mm-hmm. What's your number three?
Number three. Oh yeah, I'm saving that one for number one. Number three is sexy corn on the cob. Corn on the cob is maybe the least erotic food you could really incorporate into your lovemaking if you were going to use it because it gets stuck on your teeth.
Yeah.
You know, you got to turn it and, you know, that teeth motion is not sexy.
And also, you know, I think all of our Jewish listeners would also wonder, husk or no husk?
Wait, is that a there it is. Took me a second because of the, I get it.
Right.
Husk, according to this costume that I'm looking at right here.
Oh.
This actually is a pretty sexy outfit. I got to tell you. I wouldn't. That's. You put some butter on there and. Well, what were we talking about? Sorry.
Number three for me.
What anti-male sexiness are you against now?
Sexy Taco Bell sauce packet.
Oh, come on. That's one of the sexier things in the world.
No, I disagree. Because here's the thing. You know why I eat Taco Bell?
So I can poop.
Because I hate myself. And the last thing I want is for something quasi-sexual to be integrated into a place that I just eat Taco Bell to feel shitty, and because I do feel shitty, and then I feel shittier, and I don't want there to be any kind of sensual come-hitherness to Taco Bell. I like it as it is, which is the single worst thing I can put in my body that takes a bad day and makes it slightly better, but then ultimately worse. There's nothing sexy about it.
So you're telling me when you have that burrito, you crack open that packet and you just drench the burrito tip with the hot sauce and you put it in your mouth? Come on.
Can we talk about packets for a second? Come I was on. At a Chick-fil-A over the weekend in Maryland, and they had a basket next to where all the condiments were for sauces, unused sauces that you can return there.
Yeah, you didn't like that.
You like that?
They're unopened. People aren't wiping their nose with it.
Have you ever eaten with a child before?
Have I ever eaten with a child?
Yes.
What do you mean? Oh, why? Because they do weird stuff with the packets?
I mean, like, their hands are covered in their own shit and then other sauces and grease.
Come on.
And they touch everything.
Yes.
So, like, I assume that sauce packet has been handled by a greasy little child. And I don't think...
Who do you think's working behind the counter?
But also, who gives
greasy
a shit?
Children.
How much of fucking sauce do they make? Like, fucking who cares?
Let me ask you this,
then. If you throw it away, if you don't use it. Like, what in what other world? Like, when you go to a restaurant, I am fucking praying that the bread I don't eat is not given to the next person at that table.
Okay, how about this, then? If you're saying that kids are gross and touch stuff and mess with it, what do you think they're doing with, like, the sugar packets at the table that don't get thrown away? They just take them out of the thing, they rub their hands on them, they put them back in the thing.
If you are saying to me that they should get rid of all the sugar packets at every table and every diner between customers, you'll have no quarrel from me.
Really?
No quarrel at all, sir.
So what about like, milk and cream and stuff at, like, Starbucks? Like, that's, like, a trust situation.
It's all covered. What do you think? There's, like, a kid, like,
you think
putting
kids
their fingers in the milk?
Kids sneeze. Kids cough.
It's covered.
It's not told. They're always unscrewed a little bit so you can get it out.
I don't want to even conceive it. That there is a sauce packet that's been in someone else's hands. Now in my hands.
Because, like, I feel bad when I go to Starbucks and I take too many napkins and I don't need the last six of them. I leave them on the counter in case somebody wants them.
Napkins.
Yeah, but, like, you're still wasting.
What do you think? Well, when the great reckoning happens and there are no more napkins, you're going to cry into your arm about how you were the main contributor because you took one extra napkin at Starbucks?
It's usually a lot. I usually overestimate how many napkins
I have. Well, that to me is a problem with napkin deployment.
That's me, for
sure. Because, like, when you're trying to take one and then you take a stack, it's not your fault. It's the mechanism that they provided. That's why those big, tall ones where you have to pull an individual napkin out.
No, those are bullshit, those ones.
But
those
prevent
ones.
The very thing you're lamenting.
No, I'm not saying, like, I'm taking too many by accident because, like, my thumb gets too deep in the thing. Like, I'm just stupid. Hmm. I feel like I need 11 napkins for a coffee.
A little
I'm just
too much thumb.
Dumb.
Yeah.
But... All right, this one's my. This is almost my favorite one. Sexy Eiffel Tower.
It's a building.
You're a sexy building.
Yeah.
And, like, you're not even, like, a building that's, like, really sexy. It's just, like, a big old metal, like, oil thing. It looks like.
An oil derrick, yeah.
And
sexy
then,
oil derrick.
And then you just
doesn't work.
It's not even really a sexy costume.
Well, the bottom of it is kind of sexy, to be honest with you.
Well, I mean, yeah, she's wearing a skirt and she's got legs and a fish.
Number two for me, sexy cat. Just fucking lazy. It is the official uniform of girls who just could not put in a millisecond of effort into their costume.
Okay.
They run to Ricky's here in the city and they get a cat mask and the little hairband with the ears, and now here's your costume, because every woman I know owns a black outfit for the club, and then they just put on the cat thing and then they put on the ears. Sometimes there's not even a mask, it's just ears. And then they put a little black makeup on their nose and some whiskers and you're a sexy cat. The single laziest. My dad used to have a t-shirt that had check boxes that said, my Halloween costume is a ghost. And you check the box and that's your... Even lazier than that very thing is a cat.
You are a spoiled 40-year-old man when there are 24-year-old girls walking around in sexy cat outfits and you're like, you're lazy. Ugh.
I like how the cat outfit is like the ramen noodles of Halloween costumes in your eyes. It's the virtue of being young and broke here in the city, and the only thing you can afford is a hairband with ears.
Listen, any women out there that are dressing up as sexy cats or nurses,
pictures.
I support you in all that you do.
I believe
Thank
in your
you.
Magic.
Well, here's my number one. This is by far.
It should be number two. Oh wait, no, you're right. Number one. Go ahead.
Number one.
Sorry, please. By all means.
Sexy Captain Crunch.
Stop.
The 60-year-old man, I'm guessing, based on his appearance in the box, converted. Look at this costume. Hat. Wow. I mean, you don't like the cat because it's lazy. Look at this. Look at the detail in this outfit. Look at the hat.
Right.
Look at the right in there. It's
right. But like what is inherently sexy about?
About what? The most delicious cereal ever?
You could do a sexy Trix rabbit. You could do a sexy leprechaun for Lucky Charms. You could do a sexy...
Oh, that's not good enough for you either now, Greg.
You could do a sexy Count Chocula. Sexy. There's nothing inherently sexy about Captain Crunch.
Sexy Frankenberry.
Well, again, redundant.
She just paints herself pink and then...
Finally, number one for me, kind of goes off something you mentioned before, sexy podcaster. Impossible.
Can't do it.
What are you going to do? Wear a bustier with Cheetos dust on it?
Doesn't like Elizabeth Banks have a podcast though? I feel like that's
so that's it. But that's like or Anna Faris. Like you could dress like Anna Faris and be like, I'm a sexy podcaster. But you could also say I'm the house bunny.
But of course you're like, oh, that's so lazy. You are Anna Faris. What was your Halloween costume? What was your most recent Halloween costume that you did?
I was a fucking lobster. I bought a full lobster costume because my kid was a Little Mermaid. So I was a lobster.
Oh, I guess technically you dressed up at the Comic-Con, so...
And I also was a Kirk at the Comic-Con. I still have the lobster costume. I have to go to a costume party this weekend. I'm going to have to wear it. Anyways, we asked you, the Puck Soup listener, the question of the week was...
Oh, yes.
What exactly... Give us an NHL player and an NHL costume. An NHL costume. A Halloween costume for that NHL player.
NHL costume.
Yeah, NHL
costume. They're called
costume.
Uniforms,
Greg.
He's
masquerading as a commissioner. you sent in many, many great answers, and we'll read some of them here on the air. Alex Voorhees writes in, Neil Yakupov, Nicolas Cage being chased by bees, a reference to The Wicker Man. Neil Yakupov does not look like Nicolas Cage.
No.
I'm just assuming that's just a great outfit for a guy who maybe has fallen on hard times.
Yeah, but like I don't know what the link is. Like, does he scream a lot? Does Neil Yakupov?
I don't know.
Bees!
Did he ever get caught up with a cult at one point?
Did the Bruins do something to him? The quote bees?
The bees.
Is that a situation that I don't know about?
Go ahead, bud.
How about Jonathan Erickson as the pylon?
Jonathan Erickson as a pylon is pretty great.
That's a good costume.
It's a great costume. Peter Shepard writes in, Milan Lucic as a scarecrow, intimidating until the crows realize his feet are literally planted in the ground.
That's pretty good. How about Andrew Williams? Jamie Benn as Scrooge McDuck. Because he's too frugal to eat out.
Holy shit.
Another reference to Jamie Benn's one bad tweet ever.
Yet he also will dive into the good stuff. Play Scrooge McDuck. Yep. Kyle Stevens writes in, this is a quasi does Sidney Crosby like. Sid definitely dresses as Sid and goes for an optional skate in the dark so as not to attract arena employee trick-or-treaters. We know for a fact that does Sidney Crosby like Halloween. Sidney Crosby dressed up as Jon Snow, found out.
Yeah.
So he does like Halloween.
Mav Coop. Brian Boyle is Captain Morgan.
That's good.
That's good. Well, like Brian Boyle doesn't have the mustache going anymore. So when he has the mustache and the long hair going.
Definitely Captain Morgan.
Or when he doesn't have any of that, he's Tag from Friends. So he's got a lot of flexibility. He's totally Tag from Friends.
Eddie Cahill,
who rejected our podcast.
Who rejected our podcast, right.
Invite.
Scott Danoon writes in, with his receding hairline and long hair in the back, Phil Kessel is a fake tan and a pair of red underwear away from being the perfect Hulk Hogan, outside of maybe, I guess, a physique.
Yeah, like he's a little too round, but yeah.
That's pretty good, though. I think also, I mean, honestly, receding hairline, long hair in the back, and the stubble... He kind of reminds me of, let me see if you get this reference, Bob the Goon from Batman 89, the Joker's number one guy who he shoots at the parade.
Oh, yeah! No, Bob the Goon, he's too tiny.
Okay.
Feels a little too big. How about this one? Booty Wills 1, who goes by Rudy Wills 1 on Twitter. Oh, Booty's his Halloween name. Mm-hmm. Claude Giroux as Slender Man. Because a few years back, some dummies believed he was for real, but it's not something people talk about anymore.
He's on the redemption tour, too. Whew. Brian O'Neill writes in, a perfect one, based on not only what he looks like, but also what he loves. Jonathan Taves as Captain Planet.
Who's Captain Planet?
Remember Captain Planet, the cartoon? Captain Planet and the Planeteers. It was on, like TBS. He was a superhero who literally saved the environment, hence Captain Planet.
How about Jake Flancer? Ryan O'Reilly is a Tim Hortons employee.
That's good. Fabrice writes in, Brian Elliott as Swiss cheese. Mean, but that'd be kind of funny, like, to do a full goalie uniform deal and then, like, just have Swiss cheese all over you. That'd be pretty good.
I mean, that's a little too self-deprecating, I think, for an NHL player to ever do, but I would like it. Rick Nash, this is a good one. Rick Nash is Jorah Mormont because he's an honorable guy who does everything right but still can't score. Boom!
Trip writes in, Matt Zuccarello, who, by the way, used to be the Hobbit wizard based on his resemblance to Elijah Wood, as Arya Stark, which is great because he does look like Maisie Williams.
He does have that face,
So this is actually really good.
This is a good Game of Thrones
reference. Really good Game of Thrones reference and a well-matched character to player.
This one's more visual. You have to go look at our mentions, but Amy Markscores. Magnus Payarvi as Tuukka Rask. They do look
alike.
It's amazing how much they look alike. I thought it was like, I thought that all the photos were Tuukka Rask at first. Like, it's...
Winged Wheel writes in, Ken Holland profiling. Dressing up as a competent GM, and it's a picture of Steve Yzerman. Harsh.
Yeah, that was good. That's funny. Any good ones here? Let's see.
I'll give you one more. Finally for me.
Go ahead.
This is from SJ Devils. Ilya Bryzgalov as a bear. The poor guy would be terrified of himself.
He just looks in the mirror. Oh, no.
Oh, beautiful day of trick-or-treating. Walk inside and see, bears all over the place. Everywhere I look, bears.
Also, Cheryl Ann, she sent us a link to Alex Killorn's Instagram. Killorn and who is it? There's another guy in the photo, but they're dressed as Agassi and Bjorn Borg, and it's pretty frigging good.
It's good.
Schuster and Killorn. That's pretty good. Pretty good Halloween segment for the show this week.
Much appreciated, everybody who wrote in. All right, folks, that is Puck Soup for this week. As always, we thank you for listening. The Patreon. Thanks to everybody. We're up to about 1,100 Patreon subscribers who signed up and check out the bonus content each week and each month. Next month will be our first movie commentary. Spoiler, it's Sudden Death. I think you'll really dig it. And thanks to everybody for subscribing. The mailbag segment of the show obviously coming up on Patreon. And thanks to Ngozi Akazu for joining us on the podcast to talk about Check Please. And I'm Greg Wyszynski of ESPN. Thanks for reading all of our stuff at ESPN. Mm. And now Dave will take you home.
Big mailbag this week. A lot of good questions. Because we put the question up early for once. By we, I mean I, which is my job. And I always forget to do it until Tuesday at 9 o'clock at night. And this way we only have 40 questions. This week we have like 130.
Holy shit.
Also, besides the sudden death thing, we got a potentially fun, different, weird thing for next month as well.
Stay tuned
for more.
All right.
And that's it.
Thanks for joining us, sir, babe. Talk to you next week.
Sticks and hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons, we've got sportly commentary to what if you commute, but we also cover movies, TV shows, eats and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hoggy and nonsense. Park Soup.